Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levenier. Horror coming up in this hour. Later on, Orson Welles hosts the Black Museum. But right now, it's Murder at Midnight, one of the last remaining broadcasts from the syndicated series. Heard on December 20th, 1946, the story, The Island of the Dead.
Do you any good, because this time I'm going to pass judgment myself. 15 years I've been thinking about this, dreaming about it, my fingers around your throat, digging into that flabby windpipe of yours, tighter and tighter, till you stop struggling and... Yes. And now, I've got a nice grave all ready and waiting for you. Right next to your friend.
Three graves yawning on a lonely, fog-bound island, waiting. For whom? You'll learn the answer in just a moment in tonight's story, The Island of the Dead. And now our story, The Island of the Dead, an original radio play by one of radio's best-known mystery writers, Robert Newman. Story of a dead man who came back. It's a small island, flat and barren, lying in the middle of the river. And it's truly an island of the dead, for it's the city's Potter's Field. It's here that the nameless dead are buried, those who have no relatives to claim them, and those who are too poor to pay for burial elsewhere. One end of the island is the pier, where the city launch docks. At the other end of the island, in the midst of the shallow graves, is the squat stone building where the watchman lives. It's 11:30 at night now, and he's sitting in the office, reading a paper and listening to the river sounds when...
Who's there? Who's that? I said, who's there? Who the devil are you? What do you want?
I think that this is where I'm supposed to come.
What do you mean? Hey, wait a minute. Are you the new relief man?
My name is Simon.
I'm Hallity. From now on, lay off that stuff, will you? This place is bad enough without you spooking around, not answering when someone talks to you.
Bad?
The crying bells, you know what the job is, don't you? Receiving the stiffs that they send out, keeping the records and digging the graves. You'd be all alone, except for Joe, the guy that runs the launch up at the other end of the island. He only comes out when he has to.
Yes, I know.
Well, I'll go change me shirt and blow. I didn't think they were going to be able to get a relief man until next week. I'm sure glad you got out here tonight. This place was really starting to get me down. And I'll be out in a couple of minutes. Simon! Simon, where are you?
Over here.
I didn't know where the blazes you'd gone. Simon... What in thunder are you doing?
Digging. Digging some graves.
I see that. Three of them. What for?
Because they'll be needed before the night is over.
Huh? You mean they called up and told you to get them ready? It's funny. I didn't hear the phone.
No. No one phoned.
Well, then why are you doing it?
I told you. I think they'll be needed.
You think? Look, I'm going right now. I'll be back tomorrow night. Unless I decide not to come back at all.
Wait a minute, Haverty. I don't get it. Who are you talking about? And when did I see him?
The new relief man. Just came out about a half hour ago. You must have seen him. This is the only way you can get out to the island.
That's why I don't get it. If anybody did come out to the island, I'd be bound to see him. But no one did. Not tonight.
What? What do you mean?
I mean I only made one trip out tonight. I didn't have no passengers. At least not live ones. All I brought out was a stiff.
Marsh?
Yes, speaking.
Is this Mr. Alec Marsh, the attorney?
Attorney? Well, I used to be one. I haven't practiced law in over 10 years. Who's this?
This is the watchman of the city cemetery out on Channel Island. I'd appreciate it very much if you'd come out here immediately.
Come out there? In the middle of the night? What for?
To identify a body.
To what? What makes you think that I can identify it?
I have reason to believe that you are one of the few people who can identify it. It's quite urgent. If you take the launch at River Street, I'll meet you at this end. Will you do it?
Well, I don't know. It's a funny business, but... Well, all right. I'll leave right away.
Is it much further to the island?
Nope. You can't see it because of the fog, but it's just right ahead there.
Is this something new? Getting people to go out to the island to identify bodies? Don't they usually do it down at the morgue?
Yeah, mostly, but every once in a while I get some dope after the body's been shipped out to the island.
Well, I don't like it, any part of it. Getting a man out in the middle of the night. This trip, especially with a river like this, not being able to see anything. Just the whistles and the foghorns. And then landing there on the island where... Oh, for 2 cents, I'd go right back with you. Not go ashore at all.
Well, here we are. Just let me make up fast. Okay. Well? You getting off?
I don't know. I'll tell you what. The man that phoned said he'd meet me. I'll go up to the end of the dock. If he's not there, I'll come back.
Okay.
Mr. Marsh?
Yes? Was it you who phoned me?
Yes. Will you follow me, please? This way.
How the dickens can you see where you're going when it's so dark?
You get used to it. Just as you get used to anything. As a matter of fact, it's probably just as well it is so dark.
Why? It couldn't be worse even in daylight, when you can see the graves. But how did you happen to call me on this business anyway?
I told you. Because you're one of the very few people who can be of any help. Weren't you the attorney for the defense in the Sloan case?
Sloan? Sloan? I can't remember. Simon Sloan.
Yes.
I'm not sure. If I was, it was a long time ago.
More than 15 years. But you should remember.
Yes. Yes, I think I was. He was convicted on a charge of murder in the second degree and got 20 years. With time off for good behavior, he's probably out now and... Wait a minute. Is that who you want me to identify? Is he dead?
Here we are. Watch the step going in.
Well, what are you waiting for? Aren't you going to put on the light?
No, not yet.
What was that? The door. You locked the door. What's the idea? What are you trying to do?
That's just so we won't be disturbed.
Disturbed? Well, who's going to disturb us? I insist you put on the light. Open that door immediately.
We were talking about the Sloan case. You admitted that you were the attorney for the defense. Do you feel that you did a good job of defending him?
How do I know? How do you expect me to remember? The fact that he was convicted doesn't mean that it was my fault. Besides, what's that got to do with you?
Did you think that he was guilty?
How do I know what I thought? What difference does it make? He pleaded guilty.
He wasn't guilty. He didn't want to plead guilty. Who made him change his plea?
I did, so what?
Very well. There.
Where is... You. It's you. You're Simon Sloan.
A dead man on the island of the dead. Three waiting graves. As the clock moves steadily towards the witching hour, prepare yourself for... opposite him. And slowly, his face pale and drawn, he sinks into a chair.
You shouldn't have done this to me. I told you I'm not well. I've got a bad heart.
Why did you do what you did to me? Why did you make me change my plea to guilty?
I had to.
Why?
Because Donna, the district attorney, made me. He wanted the conviction to build up his record. And he had something on me. An attempted bribery in another case. What are you going to do to me? I've got to get away from here. I'm a sick man, I tell you. I'm
not going to do anything to you. You can go now. If you can. There. The door's open.
Why are you looking at me like that? You think I... can't make it, don't you? And that's why you're letting me go. Well, I'll show you. I'll show you. I just have to take it easy and...
No, I didn't think you would make it. That is why I'm not angry at you. Now I have a place for you. Right outside here. For you... and for some others, too.
Hello?
Mr. Donner?
Yes, who's this?
This is the watchman at the city cemetery out on Channel Island. We have a body out here that we'd very much like you to look at.
A body? What for?
We think that possibly you may be able to identify it.
And what makes you think that?
Well, after all, you were district attorney for several years.
What? Why, I haven't been DA for... What's that got to do with it?
It may have a great deal to do with it. Will you come? The launch leaves from the foot of River Street.
Yes, I know. Something very strange about this, but... All right, I'll come. Will there be someone to meet me at the other end?
Yes, Mr. Donner. I'll meet you. I'll be waiting for you.
Is it usual to have someone try and identify a body when it's already in a grave?
Oh, no, it's very unusual. But this was a rather special case. I'm sorry I haven't any flashlight, but I do have a candle. There.
Good.
do know him?
Yes. Yes, I know him. His name is Marsh. Alec Marsh. He was disbarred about 10 years ago. When did he die?
About an hour ago.
But that's impossible. He couldn't have gotten here so quickly.
Not if he was dead. But when he came here, he was still alive.
I don't understand. Why should he have come out here in the first place?
Well, because I phoned him. I asked him to come out. Just as I asked you to come out. You see, I wanted to talk to him about this Simon Sloan case.
The Sloan case? But what? How? Wait a minute. Lift that candle up. You're Sloan.
Yes, Donna. I'm Sloan. What's left of him after 15 years in jail? And you're the man who sent me there when you knew I wasn't guilty.
You can't blame me for that. After all, it was my job to prosecute. And when I did find out the truth...
You did find it out, eh?
When I did, it was too late. You'd already been convicted and sent up, and I've got to get away from here. Let me go, you...
No. No, Donna. Not yet. There are a few more things you're going to tell me first. How did you find out I wasn't guilty?
The detective in the case told me. A chap named Richards. Bill Richards.
Richards. Yes, it would be Richards. But afterwards, when you found out the truth, you could have ordered a new trial and gotten me out. But you didn't. You let me stay there and rot.
No, I couldn't. It was just Richards' word. He said he wouldn't testify.
You're lying, Donna. You know you're lying. And you know it won't do you any good. Because this time I'm going to pass judgment. Myself. Oh. 15 years. I've been thinking about this. Dreaming about it. My fingers around your throat. Digging into that flabby windpipe of yours. Tighter and tighter until you stop struggling and... Yes. Now I've got a nice grave all ready and waiting for you. Over here, right next to Marsh. And one more for our friend Richard.
Shall we get out?
Yes. Now, you wait right here for us, Joe.
As soon as it's you, Harry, I will. I sure have had my belly full. What a night.
Well, look who's talking. Me, I've got to go traipsing all over this bloody island just because your friend here comes into the station house with a story nobody believe except the captain.
For crying bells, Richards. You think I made it up? What about those two other guys Joe said he brought out here? What about those three graves this guy Simon was digging?
Well, where are they? Did you dream them up, too?
I didn't dream anything up, Richards. They're right over here.
They do look like graves. I got a match here someplace. Let's take a look at them. Good.
Good Lord. There's a body in this one. And in this one here, too.
I see them. This one here looks like... What is Marsh? Alec Marsh. And that's John Donner.
Well, now am I crazy? Now was I making things up?
Shut up. This guy that came out here. You said his name was Simon?
Yes.
Was he, let's see. He must be about 50, 55 now. Probably looks older. Tall, thin face, gray hair.
That's right, that's him. Do you know him?
Yeah, I know him. Look, I was ribbing you before, but that man's dangerous. Killer. I'm going to stay here and try and find him. They'll probably need help. You and Joe take the launch back to shore, get hold of the captain, and have him send out 3 or 4 more men. Fast.
Okay, Richard, right away.
Sloan! Sloan! Where are you? I know it's you. And you know you can't get away. That building. Went in there, huh? Wonder if he's got a gun. Yeah. So see. Stick him! him up, Sloan. I'll let you have it. Reach, did you hear me?
Yes, Richard. I hear you.
Put on the light.
There isn't any light in here. But I've got a candle. Just a second.
So, it really is you. I heard you were out of stir, and I was sure it was as soon as I saw Marsh and Donner out there. You killed them, didn't you?
Yes, I killed them.
This is really funny. I'd like to hear someone now say there isn't such a thing as fate.
Yes, it is funny. I tried to get you on the phone just the way I did Marsh and Donner. But of course I couldn't. Then you come out here on your own.
You thought you'd get me too, huh? Well, that's okay. I tried to get you. And I would have if that jury hadn't gone so panty-waste and given you just 20 years. You know that it was me that framed you, don't you?
Yes. I know it. I just don't know why.
Why? Because I've always hated you, that's why. I was just a flatfoot and you were a gambler pulling in big dough. I never could touch you on the level. That's why I hated you. That's why I framed you. Well, I didn't get you then 15 years ago. But I've got you now.
Have you, Richard? I guess maybe you ought to look around. See where we are.
Hmm? What do you mean?
We're in the room where they keep the stiffs until they're buried. Kind of an icebox. And if you'll notice, there's no handle on this side of the door. That means there's no way of getting out.
What? Why, you... So what? Someone will be along sooner or later.
Oh, when anyone does, it'll be too late. Because that door is airtight. That means that as soon as we use up the air that's in here now, we're finished. Both of us. And it's starting to get bad already. Feel it?
I mean, you trapped me. You got me in here deliberately. Well, you won't get away with it.
No good, Richards. That won't hurt me. Not any more than I'm hurt already. You see, I'm all gone inside. That's why they released me. I must have passed out in the street last night, and my heart was so bad that they thought I was dead. They sent me out here for burial. But I wasn't dead. I couldn't die until I'd even things up. And the boat, they waited till they put me ashore. Now I've done it. Gotten all three of you.
No. No, no. There must be some way out. Some... The smoke. I can't breathe.
No, Richards. It's getting worse every minute. There's no way out. That candle. That's our life, see? When that goes out, we're finished. And it's starting to flicker. Turn blue already.
Help. Help. Somebody, please.
There is no help, Richards. This is it. There. The candle's gone out. You might just as well lie down and take it quietly like me. Well, there's just one thing. One little thing. You see, I only dug three graves for the three of you. Now, someone else will have to dig mine.
Gasping bodies drop to the floor. The mission of Simon Sloan is completed. First,
Marsh, then Donner, and finally Richards succumb to
murder at
midnight. Again, when death stalks the wicked, as the clocks strike 12 for
murder at
midnight, untuned to yesterday, a recording from December 20th, 1946. You're listening to an hour of horror, untuned to yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Up next, a tour of the Black Museum from Orson Welles as our curator, and a 1952 episode called Kilroy Was Here, harkening back to the days of the Second World War when American GIs would scribble that saying on walls wherever they were stationed with the accompanying memorable image. A take on that phrase next on the Black Museum.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. The Black Museum, it's a repository of death. Here in the grimy stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide, where everyday objects, a phonograph record, a postcard, a color photograph, a simple statuette, all are touched by murder. Here's two scribbled notes, bits of paper with three words scrawled across them. Slogan known around the world, a slogan you recognize. Words created in the kind of lonely, fond men far from home, men at war, have enjoyed through all of history.
What's it mean, Inspector?
It would be nice to know, Sergeant. I suspect that if we did know, we'd have the answer to this nasty business.
Well, this killer, sir, it's possible he's an American. That phrase was American, sir, all through the war. Kilroy was here.
Kilroy was here. And he's still here. In the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum.
Here we are in the Black Museum. Scotland Yard's Museum of Murder. Here's a typewriter. Your secretary uses one. Perhaps your son or daughter writes their school essays on a machine like this. This one is used to write a letter. That letter brought a woman to an address and death to the author of that letter.
Here are the notes.
Scrawled on line paper such as children use, children who are just learning to write. And a photograph showing the same three words scratched on a wooden surface. 3 times 3 was a number in witchcraft in ancient times. 3 times 3 words were written. This wasn't witchcraft. Merely murder. Began for Inspector Liggett and Sergeant Porter in the usual manner. A telephone rang in the inspector's office at the yard.
Inspector Liggett here.
Sergeant Garth, 11th District Metropolitan Police, sir. We're at the Royal Roost, sir. Private Supper Club, 15 Marley Court. The proprietor, Matt Bolton, has been shot and killed, Inspector.
Very well, we'll be right along. Well, Sir Matt Bolton has finally departed this earth, Porter.
In the expected manner?
In the expected manner.
You wouldn't know Matt Bolton. 99 chances out of 100, you never heard of him. But enough people had heard of him to net Matt Bolton a neat six-figure income from various protective associations and entertainment enterprises, such as the Royal Roost, one of those small private supper clubs, manages to keep its license by operating just within the law. The club was easy to find. In place of a neon sign, there was a police constable at the door.
Looks like it's this way, I think.
Stuffy in here, Inspector?
It always is in these places. Apparently, a good many people prefer to amuse themselves breathing a combination of tobacco and poor liquor fumes rather than good fresh air.
Quite a costume on those girls.
The roosters in the Royal Rooster. Get it, Sergeant?
I've never seen a rooster with so little on besides tail feathers.
And I know I. Look, we better get to work, Sergeant.
The two policemen crossed the nightclub, skirted the dance floor, and quietly passed through the doorway near the bandstand. To their left, another door stood open, revealing a cubicle complete with mirror lights, another girlish rooster, a man, and a body. A body full length on the floor. The girl was saying,
"Look, we simply can't send a chorus out once more. Do I get to do my act, or don't I?"
"I'm Inspector Liggett, Sergeant. The young lady may do her act. I doubt if she'll try to go outside the club in that costume."
"Well, thank you, Inspector. First this man said he thought the show ought to go on so the customers wouldn't be disturbed, and then he held me here. Well, look, that's my cue. I'll be back. Don't worry, I'm not going any place. You're so right about that, Inspector.
Knows her way around, that girl, sir. Found the body, didn't turn her hair."
"So I noticed. Find a weapon, Sergeant?"
"No, sir, not in here.
Porter, check the exits."
"Very good, sir."
"Oh, we've done that, sir. Only two, the way you came and the back door, fire exit. No one in the kitchen saw or heard anything. We haven't touched the body. Waited for you and the medical examiner, sir."
Very good. All right. Turn out his pockets, Porter."
"Yes, sir. Here's something, Inspector. Tucked in his breast pocket."
"Quite a touch. I take it you didn't see this, guard?"
"No, sir. We left the body strictly as it was."
"Odd. Almost a signature. It's a note. Kilroy was here."
For a moment, memories of other days crowded into the tiny dressing room. A phrase which had meant chuckles once seemed incongruous in that atmosphere of violent death. And then Mabel was back with boyfriend.
"May I inquire who your escort is, Miss Martin?"
"Larry King, meet Scotland Yard."
"Gentlemen."
"How do you do? Is this your usual practice, Mr. King?"
"If you mean escorting Miss Martin home, that's correct."
"You are good friends?"
"We're engaged."
"I see. Miss Martin, before you leave us to get dressed, during your employment here, have you ever had any trouble with Mr. Bolton?"
"Do you mean, did he make advances?"
"Yes."
"Well, naturally."
"I see. Now, Mr. King, did you know about these advances?"
"I did."
"Did you ever have any trouble with Mr. Bolton?"
"Nothing to speak of."
"Of course, it never is anything to speak of. You served during the recent war."
"I did. 8th Army. All the way from Tobruk to northern Italy."
"Does the expression, Kilroy was here, mean anything to you?"
"The Americans, 5th Army, they used it. I've seen it many times."
"Very well. Leave your addresses, both of you, with Sergeant Garth here. And don't leave the city. We may need you. That's all for now."
Now the routine begins. Inspector Liggett and Sergeant Porter return to the yard. The orders go out.
"Have them run a complete check on Bolton's pals. They'll all have alibis, but run the check anyway."
That was a start. Now the patient waiting, putting together the few facts available. The hardest part of police work anywhere.
"So, Porter, no prints on that note except yours and mine."
"Correct, Inspector."
What do you got on King and the girl?
She's, remarkably respectable.
Nothing remarkable, Sergeant. What about him?
He's a lawyer in the city. Rather successful. Good reputation.
Ever crossed Bolton's path in his work?
Nope. He's a copyright lawyer. Deals with writers, mostly.
Nothing there, then.
Takes patience. Lots of it. Check and recheck. Wait for information. Wait for the telephone to ring.
Inspector Liggett here.
Detective Ashton, sir. 23rd District.
Go ahead, Ashton.
At 14 and a half Haven Mew, sir. We've been watching the place, sir. That King fellow lives there.
Yes, I know.
The superintendent's wife has been found, sir, on the cellar steps, strangled. We found the note in her apron pocket. Kilroy was here, it says.
Wait for the telephone to ring. And when it does ring, another death, another note. No solution. Merely complication piled on complication. A short while later, in the basement apartment of the newly widowed janitor.
You found her yourself, Mr. Evans?
Yes, sir. Lying there, she was on the cellar steps. I was going down to look at the oil burner.
I see. Your wife have any enemies, Mr. Evans?
No, sir, no. Where would the likes of us come in, having enemies? Quarrelsome a little, you might say. But what woman isn't?
She quarreled with you.
With me, mostly. Not that I could blame her. It's hard work, a place like this, you know. Once in a while with a tenant. The children in 4B, for instance, they write on the walls. So my wife argues with the mother.
Mm-hmm.
The nice young man in 6G lets the bathtub run over. 5G complains. My wife scolds Mr. King.
I see, yes. Now, is Mr. King at home now?
I believe so, sir.
All right. Thank you. We'll do our best to find whoever killed your wife, Mr. Evans.
Oh, thank you, sir. She had a temper, I know, but she never did no real harm.
Up in the self-service elevator on the 6th floor. Find 6G and ring the bell. Have it opened, not by Larry King, but by Mabel Martin. Far more fully dressed than the last time the inspector saw her.
Well, Miss Martin, collected the insurance yet?
Cut it out, Inspector. I don't have to stand for that sort of thing. In fact, I could ask you for a warrant before I let you in here.
But you won't, will you, Mr. King?
Ask your question. They're about Mrs. Evans, I assume.
Oh, Larry, please.
Don't worry, darling. Ask your questions, Inspector.
You quarreled with Mrs. Evans.
I did. I wanted my bathtub fixed. The drain was backing up. She told me to go to fix it myself, that's all.
You're sure that was all? Murder seems to have a way of happening in your vicinity, King.
Is that an accusation?
What's all this to do with Matt Bolton?
I don't know. But there is a link. Quite a clear link, Miss Martin. You see, on Mrs. Evans, we found a bit of paper. And on it was scrawled, Kilroy was here. Any ideas on that? Ex-soldier, now Solicitor King.
Solicitor King had nothing to say. His puzzlement, his lack of knowledge seemed honest enough. Inspector Liggett drew no conclusions. He waited. The routine continued. The reports came in.
The Martin girl has a new job. Same type of club. I've seen the act, Inspector. Same song. More clothes.
Nothing on Bolton's cronies. Every one of them has an alibi.
King seems to follow a set routine, Inspector. To the office, back home, dinner, then calls for the girl. Even eats his lunch at the same time every day in the same restaurant.
Nothing much to go on there, just a time of waiting. A week passed. Telephone rang once again.
Inspector Liggett here.
Detective Ashton, sir. We've another one for you.
What?
Yes, sir. A butcher this time. Name of Andrews. 2 blocks from the apartment house where King lives. Head bashed in with his own mallet. Scratched on the chopping block with one of his own knives. The same old message, sir. Kilroy was here.
Kilroy was here. Familiar words with a smile in their words to remember fondly. 3 times they appear. On a butcher's block, on scraps of paper, and today they can be seen in the Black Museum.
Thank you.
A third killing, and signed exactly the same way. Kilroy was here. More, this murder had taken place within a few blocks of 14 and a half Haven Mews, where Larry King lived. The same young man who was the secret fiancé of the singer, and whose dressing room the first body had been found. The same young man who lived in the house where the janitor's wife had been strangled. Inspector Liggett lost no time reaching the scene of the latest crime.
Ashton.
Yes, sir?
Any fresh?
Just the things I reported, sir. There's the mallet, the weapon.
Yeah.
The message was scratched with this knife.
Hmm. Any prints?
So the laboratory crew are trying to raise some. Nothing yet.
Very well. Who's the woman?
The widow.
Mrs. Andrews, I really dislike bothering you with questions at this time, but you understand that speed may be the essence now.
Yes, of course, Inspector.
I understand that it was you who found your husband.
Yes. I stopped here to get some money for a dress. It'll have to be a black one now.
Did you always come to him for that kind of money?
Well, Jim had his ways. He was considerably older than I am. He seemed just strong when we first married. Well, later he was... Well, it changed to domineering.
I understand, but now look, just a few more questions, please. Does the phrase on the chopping block mean anything to you?
Kilroy was here? No. No, it's just a... Well, I think I heard it on the radio once or twice.
From the way you described your husband, I'd say he was rather, well, positive.
A mild way of putting it. Positive. Domineering, a man who brooked no argument. As the questions went on, the picture became more clear of a large, almost brutish man who covered his deficiencies with bluster and bullying. Finally.
Just one more point, Mr. Andrews. Did your husband ever argue with his customers? I mean, did he make any enemies among them?
Well, some. Only over little things.
Can you give me a specific instance?
Well, last week.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was last week. A nice young man said Jim was overcharging him. They had words. The man, whose name is Larry King, from the apartment house on Haven Mews, he swore he'd never buy here again.
I see.
Have I helped, Inspector?
You may have. Just a little time will tell, I suspect. Just a little time.
A little time. Within the hour, Larry King was in custody, taken in charge for 24 hours on suspicion of complicity. His fingerprints revealed...
nothing.
His answers to the barrage of questions revealed...
nothing.
Wearily, the inspector and Sergeant Porter returned to the office to face unrelated facts and a no-progress report. Wearily, the inspector picked up the receiver of his office intercom.
Yes, Sergeant?
You have a caller, sir.
Who is it?
Miss Mabel Martin, sir. She insists on speaking with you.
Miss Martin was ushered in, seated in front of the desk.
I've got something to tell you, Inspector.
Please do.
Well... Larry didn't kill anybody.
Didn't he?
No. I did.
Steady, Sergeant. Please take down Miss Martin's statement. Now, I must warn you, Miss Martin. Anything you say will be taken down in writing and may be used in evidence.
Yes, I understand.
Now the floodgates opened.
I killed all three of them and left the notes to make it look as though Larry did it.
So simple, so obvious.
Matt Bolton threatened me. He said if I didn't come back to him, he'd change his insurance policies and tell Larry about us. Well, I shot him. It was a .22 that Larry had given me.
One death accounted for. The policeman listened gravely.
Mrs. Evans was always snooping. She threatened to tell Larry about Matt and me. I did it in the cellar, behind the coal pile. I strangled her.
Quite logical. The inspector waited.
Andrews, the butcher, I used to shop there for Larry. Andrews made some advances. He reached for me and I grabbed a meat cleaver. Then I scratched the note on the wood. That's the story, Inspector.
Here. Tell me, how much do you weigh, Miss Martin?
About 107 pounds. Why, what's that got to do with...
Sergeant Porter, what was the caliber of the bullet found in Matt Bolton?
.38 caliber, sir.
Thank you. And did you notice a coal pile in the cellar at 14 and a half Haven Mews?
It's an oil burner, sir. Quite modern.
Thank you. And the weapon in the Andrews case?
A mallet, sir. Not a cleaver. A mallet.
And, Sergeant, can you picture a young woman of 107 pounds knocking out and killing a man of Andrews' size?
Not very well, sir.
Of course, it's obvious her heart and her courage are as large as she is, if not larger, but...
All right, have your fun. I've made a fool of myself, but Larry didn't kill anyone. I know that. I know it. You can't do this to him.
Look. I wouldn't worry, Miss Martin, if I were you. In fact, if I were you, I'd hurry out to the front of the building. Mr. King is about to be released, and I think you'll want to meet him there. Won't you?
Oh, Inspector. Oh, Sergeant, I... Oh, forgive me, please.
How about it, Porter? Care to have a girl like that to marry?
Yes, sir. For more reasons than one. Where are we now, sir?
Offhand, Porter, I'd say we were just about where we were when we first heard of the Andrews killing. Put on your thinking cap, Sergeant. This is quite a problem.
They sat there in silence. Their minds sifted fact after fact. And once they'd been through the meager supply of facts on hand, they started over again. At one point, the inspector said, half to himself,
"There's something we're overlooking. Probably quite a simple point. It usually is, but..."
He was quite right. In fact, the inspector was quite appalled, so appalled, he spoke in what amounted to a whisper.
"Sergeant, hand me that telephone directory, please."
"What? Oh, yes, sir." "Can I help you, sir?"
No, thank you. Just get your hat, Sergeant.
Get my
hat? Yes, we're going back to 14 and a half Haven Mews.
That's King's address.
Yes, and according to the directory, it is also the residence of one Joseph Kilroy, one of the seven Kilroys listed in the London telephone directory.
Doesn't take long from Scotland Yard to Haven Mews, not when you travel by police car with the siren going. It doesn't take long to race upstairs to a third floor apartment. Ring the doorbell.
Come in, gentlemen. I heard your arrival in the street. What took you so long, gentlemen? No, really, no.
Mr. Kilroy, I must warn you, anything you say...
Oh, that's all right. I understand. Don't mind in the least.
Well, I'll be...
Watch him, Sergeant.
I am, sir.
Frankly...
Liggett. Inspector Liggett.
Oh, yes, thank you. Frankly, Inspector, I'm rather annoyed with you. Here I go to all the trouble of killing a man so that nice young fellow in 6G could marry that cute little baggage he's going with. And you arrest him instead of me.
I see. I'm sorry about that, too, sir. So you killed Bolton.
Saw him one night treating the girl really nastily in front of this house.
I may ask, why the woman?
Oh, she was a nagger. Really annoying. And after I killed one, it struck me I couldn't be hanged more than once. So I might as well do old Evans, too.
Thoughtful of you, Mr. Kilroy.
That butcher was a private matter, though.
Oh.
He kicked a dog once. I saw him. Didn't treat his wife any better. No kids. Figured he'd leave her his money. So I got him with his own mallet. Quite simple, you see.
And you signed your name to each one?
Of course. Good deeds are scarce in this world. Thought I ought to get proper credit each time. Now, if you'll excuse me...
Sergeant! Good work, Sergeant.
He's strong, sir. Stronger than he looks.
Cases like this usually are. Well, we'll need the ambulance. Not the wagon this time, and use the telephone directory, Sergeant. I find them quite useful books, when I remember to use them.
Who'd have thought it, sir? How many of our murderers are considerate enough to sign their killings, sir?
Murderers don't sign their work, do they? Unless, of course, their sense of humor is as twisted as their valuation of human life. This killer did autograph his killings. And today those notes can be seen in the usual place for such things, in the Black Museum.
Orson Welles will be back with you in just a moment.
Joe Kilroy was insane, of course, by every normal standard. Insane enough, certainly, to sign his name to 3 murders. And by every normal standard, the gentlemen of Scotland Yard acted correctly within the rules of their profession in tracing every possible motivation, every possible suspect, before they came to the obvious solution. After all, it is logical that when men spend their lives dealing with the deliberately obscured, they can actually fail to notice the openly obvious. Now the notes remain in their usual place in Scotland Yard in the Black Museum. And until we meet again in this same place for another story about the Black Museum, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
The Black Museum, Untuned to Yesterday, a syndicated recording from 1952. And that wraps up this hour of horror, Untuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBellner. Thanks for tuning in.